This interview with Kenneth Tucker was recorded on November 13th, 2021, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
I grew up in the East Baltimore neighborhood between off the road. It was what we call it, a strip of bars and clubs and after-hour places. I was influenced early in life by this strip, by these clubs, and which later influenced me to not only start committing crimes, but it led to my incarceration and a life sentence. However, I did grow up in a lower class home with by my grandparents. They instilled certain Christian values in me because they were church going people, but the influence of the streets was a lot too heavy, and consequently the pull to crime and to ultimately violence led to my incarceration.
From what you just heard, Janiel, pull a question out for me. From what you just heard, there's something even deeper that Mr. Tucker can go into at his choosing, but we need you to ask him. From what you just heard, what other question can you pull out? This is where our listening skills are being exercised now. Go ahead, Janiel. You having trouble coming up with a question?
Yes, I was currently trying to think of one.
Okay, so let me help you. That's why we're here. Mr. Tucker just said how he was influenced by the strip clubs. Not strip clubs, but the strip of clubs and bars. And so what you want to do is get a little more detailed now. So the question, Janiel, inform this in your mind, then ask it. The question would basically be, you know, what did you do specifically to land you in jail? So can you ask that question for me in your own way to Mr. Tucker?
Absolutely.
Before you answer, Mr. Tucker, let her ask you, if you don't mind. That's what they're really being trained in. So let her ask you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Janiel.
Well, Mr. Tucker, given the information you just gave us about your influence while growing up, can you tell us why you were incarcerated? For what reasons?
Yes, I was incarcerated for first-degree murder. I and another guy... at the time, I was 17. At the time, he was 16. We attempted to rob a guy. Both of us had guns. The guy flailed and I guess tried to avoid us. One of the guns went off, and he was shot. He went to Union Memorial Hospital, which later he passed away. And both of us were charged with first-degree murder. I received a life sentence. He received 50 years.
Okay. Anybody else want to come up with questions?
How'd you get caught?
We were caught by... we were in a car, and several guys were in the car. Me and my co-defendant got out of the car, but the car was stopped later by police because of questioning. And someone in the car mentioned both our names and later implicated us into the crime. And so someone actually led the police to us, which we were arrested, which we were eventually charged.
Okay.
So there was some...
Go ahead, Mr. Tucker. Did I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. That was me asking a question.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, baby. I'm sorry.
That's fine. So you believe that there was someone that knew y'all, like someone was around that whole situation to match you guys to the person that you shot?
Well, actually, I later found out that someone, when the gun went off, someone was looking out the window because it was a neighborhood, happened in Northwood neighborhood, and someone was looking out of their home and seeing the two of us. They later gave the police description of us, which connected to one of the guys in the car that told the police what was going on. So with those two connections, that's basically how the case was surrounded by that.
Okay, I'm going to interject here. That was good on everybody's part with the questions. Thank you, Mr. Tucker. Fellows, okay, Mr. Tucker, we're still listening to what he's saying. And a second ago, before his last answer, like two answers ago, he said something that should really be making you all think. And I'm going to need one of you fellows to form a question off of what Mr. Tucker said earlier. Remember, he said he got a life sentence. But Mr. Tucker isn't in jail right now. He didn't serve a life sentence. So what question can come to your mind and be formed off of that?
That was my next question.
How did you get, how did your lawyer bail you? Like, what happened?
Okay, here's what you're trying to say. How did you go from having a life sentence to being a free man?
That's where
you're trying to go. So I'm just trying to help you.
I didn't want to make it sound offensive either.
It's cool. Ask whatever you need.
How did your lawyer save you from getting a life sentence?
How did my lawyer what?
Save you from getting a full life sentence.
Well, I got the life sentence. But what happened was ACLU stepped into the picture after I had 40 years then. And from that, they formed a defense predicated around what they call juvenile lifers. Juvenile lifer was someone that's been incarcerated, was convicted before the age of 18. Supreme Court stated that if any event that you're convicted before the age of 18, there should be mitigating factors to determine your release. ACLU formed a case based around those Supreme Court cases. And ultimately, I went to the court. I didn't go to federal. I went to federal court first, but the state court let me out, which not exonerated me entirely, but reduced my sentence to time served. This happened in June of this year. So that's essentially how I got out.
So you've been home since June after 40-something years?
40. Well, about 45 years, exactly.
All right. I know there's some questions now.
Exactly how old were you when you were arrested? You were sentenced?
When I was sentenced, okay, I had turned 18. I was 17 when the crime was committed. I was 18 when I received my sentence.
How did you feel when you were freed in June? How has your experience been these past few months being out?
It's so overwhelming that, there's a multitude of feelings that engulfed me. It's elation and joy, but it's also in dealing with the adjustment of society now, because a lot of stuff going on now I didn't know anything about.
What were those things? The societal changes?
Basic stuff, like the advancement of computers, the advancement of phones, in terms of the way society connects now to individuals as to social networking, social media, basic stuff that, as well as the structure of the city, that's changed tremendously. I was shocked to see so many vacant homes, so many vacant houses. That kind of shocked me because growing up in the city, Baltimore City basically was a working class city, and almost everyone worked. So I didn't see, you see very few vacant houses. Now it's so many that it's overwhelming to me. So little basic stuff that perhaps, someone else would, just take for granted. Myself, I'm still adjusting. because I've only been out almost five months now. So my adjustment is ongoing.
Can you tell us a little bit about the relationships in your life with friends and family from when you were arrested to now? How have they changed?
Well, the obvious is that many people have passed away. But for those who are still living, it's been a strain because over the process of incarceration, the connection between my family and friends was broken. I had maintained a few relationships, friends and family, but overall, my family, I guess they felt like, well, he's never coming home. So in that regard, the communication kind of stopped. So that in itself was another adjustment, because once I was released, like I say, many family and friends were surprised that I even came home or got released. So, but in terms of the relationship in general, it's been fairly healthy. It's been fairly healthy, and my friends and family are very supportive. So, you know, with that in mind, it's another ongoing process too.
Does it bother you that you were involved with someone losing their life, or has that gotten easier for you to deal with as time has gone on?
No. I mean, the loss of human life is so tremendous that, and once you begin to understand the value of that, you know, that's when it becomes more and more troublesome, because a person lost their life, a father, grandfather, a husband, neighbor. So this in itself, you know, it bothered me when I finally began to understand the aspect of that. It was kind of depressing, because first of all, it stemmed from a robbery, and it led to a murder, which in itself is terrible. But you know, once a life is lost, you know, that it kind of eats you up like a cancer, in a sense. And it bothered me. I mean, it still bothers me.
How you deal with it, Ken? Do you need therapy, or is your faith? I'm sure your faith's a major part of it, but.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How do you deal with that? Because I know those thoughts probably come to you when you don't want them and you're trying to get rid of them.
Yeah, you try to juxtapose in terms of coping mechanisms. You try to give back. You try to instill different value. Well, I have a son and a daughter, so that in itself, I try to instill those values of the beauty of human life. And I give back in terms of dealing with certain gang members in Baltimore City, in terms of just try to get them to see the bigger picture, you know, that violence in itself is really not the answer. And so it's many different methods that I have attempted to try to cope with the situation. But the most important thing is that, you know, I constantly pray. I constantly pray to try to, you know, ask God. I've asked God for forgiveness, and I think I've been forgiven. However, you know, I constantly ask, you know, for guidance in terms of different ways to try to reduce different mechanisms to, you know, to help me in this situation.
Beautiful answer. Come on, fellas. I know y'all got some questions. Anybody on the chat, Alicia?
Well, I say it's just, well, not right now, but it is me. But you keep asking questions, sir. No, so I actually did have a couple questions, actually. My first question is, why did you do what you did?
Why? As I said earlier, the influence of the street. But what happened was I became addicted to drugs at an early age. which consequently led to, this is not the first time I attempted a robberies, different other ways of trying to obtain money to, in terms of feeding a drug habit that I acquired. And this was the last straw. This was just the situation that led to a whole bunch of other revealments. Because my family didn't even know I was getting high off of heroin. My family didn't know. A group of friends and I were getting high. We had been getting high for maybe like 18 months, maybe. And it just got out of control.
Hey, Kenneth, how young were you? This is just off the record. When you started the heroin?
I was 15 when I started getting high with drugs.
Was that? I'm just curious. Was that fairly young? Were there kids younger than that hitting heroin?
Well, during that era, it was around about the time when a lot of guys in my neighborhood became curious, you know, because most guys in my neighborhood, we're drinking on the corner, drinking wine, liquor on the corner, or we wasn't even smoking weed at the time. So the thing of the matter is, another guy introduced us to heroin, we didn't know anything about it at all. But the drug in itself is so powerful that within maybe like a few months, you know, we were already addicted. So that led to other crimes and consequently to this crime and my conviction.
Mm-hmm. Would one of the fellows please ask Mr. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we're on the time limit. Got about another 10, 15 minutes. I want you to ask your question, whoever that was. I think that was you, Alicia. But I need you to focus the question on Mr. Tucker's time in prison. And you know how we did the last interview last week with the real focus on horrendous stuff. So ask the question for me.
Okay. So how was your experience in jail, basically?
Oh, man. Okay. I started out in the Maryland Penitentiary. And I was one of the youngest guys in the Maryland Penitentiary at that time. So it was an issue of dealing with adults that were incarcerated that had life sentences. It was violent. It was brutal. But I overcame that. I stayed in the Maryland Penitentiary for some years, and then I was later transferred to Hagerstown, MCIH, which is what they call the old jail. I then went to the Maryland House Correction, what they call the CUT. I went to several institutions, but I think the most important factor was the fact that once I began the journey of trying to explore exactly why I did what I did, it led to a bunch of positive things, such as programming, education, because I did receive my AA degree and my Bachelor of Science degree, one from Coppin, one from Essex Community College. So what I did, once I got those degrees, I transformed that into different programs and helping the youth and helping gang members to escape out of that situation that they were in, which led me to get certain attentions from the media and different other people. And this is one of the reasons why ACLU contacted me, because they seen the work that I was doing inside the prison system to try to subvert or try to lead guys to more of a positive direction. I don't know whether that answers thoroughly or not, but
that answer was great. I wanted to let everybody know, because you've mentioned ACLU twice. They're fairly young fellows, and I just wanted to let them know that that stands for the American Civil Liberties Union, which helps people who have been, you know, just like taken for granted, or people who they feel need help because the system is not working in their favor. Would you say that's right, Mr. Tucker?
ACLU? Absolutely. It fills a lot of disparities. And inequalities, you know, any situation that's not like a fair playing field, so to speak. And they try to come in and correct not only disparities, but they correct conditions, because in prison conditions are very horrendous. Medical, dietary, you name it. So they come in and they look at the situation, and consequently they make attempts through the courts to change and correct, you know, whatever inequalities or inequities that the prison systems display.
Who haven't we heard from yet? Tyler, I think you've been a little quiet today. You still with us?
I'm still here. I remember asking one. I got one question. What's your plan? What's your mindset moving forward from all of it, from that experience?
Well, the number one thing I want to do is get full employment. I'm in my 60s now, but I still have a little, you know, have a little energy to work full time. And I ultimately wants to go back and get my master's degree. I don't know what school, but, and from that, I just want to continue to try to help these gang members, man. That's the main thing I want to do. I want to try to quell some of this unnecessary violence, because it's consuming the city. It's a driving force to a lot of negativity, and that's my main focus.
Are you trying
Excellent question. Go ahead, Alicia.
Are you trying to heal yourself and help gang members out at the same time?
Well, the process of healing is continuous for me, because my heart is tattered. And what I would like to reveal through my situation is that hopefully one of these gang members can see that, you know, what they're doing is not only, you know, tearing the community up, but it's destroying their own lives. So yes, definitely.
Are there any fellows that have any questions that didn't get one in earlier?
I had two. The first was, what is the worst thing you saw while being incarcerated? And then the second one was, how is the ACLU supporting you now that you're out? In what ways are they supporting you now that you're out?
Okay. The first thing I seen when I was in Maryland Penitentiary, I seen two people get burned alive in a cell. That's one of the worst things I've seen. Someone, I don't know where to get it. They got a chain, and they locked the they chained the doors of the cell, and someone threw a firebomb in the cell, and those bodies, when they came out, they were, you know, it was terrible. It was terrible. Never seen anything like this. And in terms of ACLU, I'm in a transition house as we speak, and from this transition house, I will acquire all the documentation I need: Social Security card, birth certificate, driver's license, things of this nature. And then I will go on to, full employment, which is, you know, with ACLU, they're supporting me under that guise also. But I think the most important thing what they're doing is they're trying to help me to adjust to different other situations in society. Number one being, they take me around to different groups, and I'm speaking and I'm sharing my story with others. So that in itself helps me to in a sense, pay forward in terms of helping other guys see exactly, you know, one of the downsides of violence, of crime.
When you got out, what was your mental process? What did you do to relieve your traumatic experience?
Well, you can, okay, mentally, you know, you can never, well, me personally, I would never forget every sight, every situation, every brutality, every act of violence that I've seen. I can never, ever forget none of those things. But, you know, one of the beauties of you know, once you release, you do have, you know, opportunities to see positive things, to seek out, you know, different other options, you know, not only in dealing with my faith, but in terms of, you know, speaking to people like the elderly, you know, assisting them, because my mother is an elder now. So, you know, I go to the senior citizen building and I talk to those people as well. So, the combination of dealing with the youth and with gang members, family, friends, as well as seniors, kind of puts me in a position to kind of support my healing process, and places me in a situation where as though I'm doing something positive. So that's helping me tremendously.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tucker. Luke, let me ask you this. Do you feel we've hit all our bases of pre-incarceration, while incarcerated, and afterwards? Is there anything we skipped that we need to hit, do you think, from what you've heard?
So Mr. Tucker, could you elaborate a little bit more on some of the work you're doing, some of the specifics of how you're communicating with gang members and you know, how that sort of started in prison? In short, I'd just like to hear a little bit more about your education while incarcerated and sort of, you know, you said it's sort of one thing built to another, but I'd like to hear a little bit more.
Yeah, in the process, even before I started my education process or journey, we were dealing with youth then. And what we did, we developed a program called PEN. And what it did, it allowed gang members to what they call drop their flags or be exonerated from whatever organization they were part of. So once I was released, I just extended that to the streets. There are several programs that offer different types of information that can help gang members or people to get out of the situation. But what we want to do, we want to not only educate and help these gang members to drop their flags, but we also want to provide them with different options, maybe like trades or counseling or whatever they can do to help their communities.
All righty. I would say one more question, but it might take us, if somebody can keep it short and kind of put it in synopsis, is there anybody that wants to ask one more short question before we ask Mr. Tucker to like leave us with some words of wisdom? Anybody else?
I can keep it short.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Stephanie. Go ahead. Do your thing.
Well, my question was about either your children or your mother. Like, do you remember, if you could walk us through like a moment when you kind of reunited with them after being released, kind of a moment that stood out to you?
Yeah. What happened was when I was released, everyone met at my mother's apartment. She lives in the senior citizen home, as I mentioned. And, you know, the joy and elation from that experience was none other. I seen my children, seen my mom, I seen a few cousins and a few family friends, a few friends that's in the community. And everyone, I mean, it was it was like a screaming process. And, you know, everyone wanted to take like a piece of me in a sense. it was very enjoyable. I mean, it was joyful, and I loved every minute of it. I've never had that experience before ever, so that was a great experience.
So, one word of advice to I would say the young Kenneth, to do what it takes to avoid going to jail and experiencing what you saw, what would you tell them now? Or I guess the basic words you tell your gang folks, what do you say to them?
Well, number one is, first of all, you don't really need violence to quell or to resolve any situation. And if you and I have a misunderstanding, the number one thing that we did in prison for the most part, you know, we call man up. And what it dealt with is the fact that you have two males and whatever beefs is going on or whatever misunderstandings is going on, we talk about it. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? Why did you feel this way? Now, I know in the heat of a situation, a lot of people don't feel the need to express anything verbally. But if you just step back for one moment, just step back for one moment and look at the entire situation, because most situations it doesn't really need that type of attention to go through the violence aspect. It doesn't really need, you know, in particularly gun violence. You know, you pulling out a gun, which at the time perhaps it seems to be a quick solution, but it also opens up a bombard of a lot of other things that perhaps will lead not only to your incarceration, but you would never see the streets again. So what I tell them, I say, well, look, just take one moment. You have a misunderstanding. Just take one moment, step back, and see the real significance of not only reaching out, just reach out to the guy. Ask him what the problem really is. Because in most cases, it may not be that particular person's issue. It may be something that went on earlier, or maybe a family member, or perhaps maybe some mental issues going on. So just take a step back and just question the fact that, do we really need to go ahead? Do we really need to go through this situation of violence? And a lot of guys, once they just take that moment, because once you're in the heat of the situation, you just go straight forward. You don't stop and think. You don't ask yourself, well, is this really important or is this really necessary? In most cases, it's not. So what I tell them to do, I say, well, look, just take a moment, step back, look at the entire situation, evaluate it, and determine whether this is really necessary.